Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod, brought to you by Asahi Super Dry. I'm Andy Ryan, Big Jim and Goody are with me as usual. We'll be looking back at all the main talking points from a nail-biting World Cup final as the Springboks lifted the Webb Ellis Cup to go back-to-back. We'll be looking at England's third-place finish and asking what next for them and the other Six Nations sides. Plus, we'll be having a chat with Wales centre Nick Tompkins about their tournament and being straight back to the coalface with Saracens. So settle back, enjoy, and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
Andy Rowe, you did not say that with much passion. You're a down man, aren't you? I've got my green polo shirt on here in respect and support of South Africa. Normally you come in buzzing, you're happy. New Zealand are going to win this easy. How are you, pal?
You can fuck off, Goody.
There's no way anyone from that group is going to win the World Cup. That's a fact.
Do you know what? I stand by what I said, Goody.
Well, you're wrong.
I know, but that just makes it more remarkable what the Springboks have done. Like, they've gone through the hardest trip that anyone had to get to ever win a World Cup. And that just makes it even more incredible what they achieved.
Oh, smart. Look, he's fueling the Springbok fire. You see, whenever you talk about the Springboks, whenever we do it on our pod, I'm fueling the beast. Andy Rowe just totally redeemed himself. You've just totally brought it back, haven't you, to the Springboks? All about them.
It's not about me.
It's not about me either. I'm absolutely hanging today, lads, in the doghouse.
Talk us through it. Big night last night. Where were you?
Yeah.
What time did you finish?
It was a three. Had a three in it. Might have had a four. And then I was on a plane at seven. But yeah, it was the World Rugby Awards. Hello. A very posh event that I was involved in. And yeah, just had a blowout there with the team. Like, the team that I've been working with have been amazing. So it's one of them. I wanted to give back a bit of Jimbo to them who they've not seen throughout the whole tournament. So feeling vulnerable today, but it's been wicked.
Goody, you don't need an excuse to go out and have a big blowout, do you?
I don't know, but I'm very fresh today, very happy. I had a weekend of, what did I do? Saturday I was on TNT Sports, commentated on the washout that was Bath against Leicester. And then yesterday was a nice family day. So no alcohol touched my lips this weekend, which is good. So in training. But Andy Rowe, this isn't about me. There's a bit about Jim there, but this is about you, mate. The All Blacks. I sorted you out Saturday night at Flatiron Square, a table. I'm getting reports that you were trying to throw tables by the end because you were hating Wayne Barnes' decisions. Like, when someone sorts you out a VIP table, Andy Rowe, you take your Kiwi mates down there. You got to behave, pal. You have to behave. And
what have you heard?
What did you do?
Just tonight. Hey,
I would love to tell you a story that something like that happened, but I sulked like a small child and went home after the final whistle. The whole place were Kiwi supporters. converted Kiwi supporters, which I was quite surprised about. So I didn't realise that the rest of the world wanted us to beat the Springboks and would be as upset as we were.
Not everyone. I was back in the Springboks, and my God, I was right again.
Should we have a look at the game? Where did this game rank in terms of World Cup finals for you guys?
I thought it was unreal. I really did. I knew it wasn't going to be high scoring. So firstly, I should say I picked it the other way. I can't remember. It was maybe like a 9-8 thriller that I picked and predicted in favour of the All Blacks at the start. 1-point game. Absolutely phenomenal. Had everything. You know, we always say it's one for the purists. I think it kind of was. But being in the stadium, wondering whether or not the atmosphere would be incredible if it was going to be like, say, a France-Ireland one. That was the big talking point over the last few weeks. The energy out of France has gone because them two teams are out. The atmosphere was absolutely electric in there. Like two very well-supported teams, but obviously a long way from home. So there were some neutrals. There was some French singing. There was a bit of swing low. That was it. There was a couple of kilts knocking about as well. But in terms of the energy, the atmosphere, and what we saw on the pitch was unbelievable. It's hard, you know, when you go to these big events, right, you're watching them, but there's so much kind of going on, isn't it? It's almost like a bit of a carnival, which is what we kind of want with rugby as well. We've spoken about that. But watching it back today, the game was so much better than I thought it was. I said it was one for the purist, and we use that term a lot. But actually watching it back, the skill and the physicality, obviously the jeopardy as well, but the kind of this chess game that people talk about, it was absolutely phenomenal. Every player was up at their very, not their very best, but intentionally at their very best.
Like Jim said, it had absolutely everything. You talk about drama, you talk about red cards, you talk about yellow cards, you talk about TMO decisions. The bunker came into use. The All Blacks down to 14 men after the Springboks flew out the blocks. And it looked like at halftime, Springboks are going to win this comfortably. Kane's been sent off, and rightfully so. But the way the All Blacks played in the second half, the way they took the game to the Springboks by playing a completely different brand of rugby to what the Springboks were doing, was just a credit to themselves. But it was absolute entertainment, I thought. I just loved it. The whole drama of it, edge of your seat stuff. I wasn't even supporting a team. Of course, I predicted the Springboks to win, but the physicality, the noises for some of the hits that you're getting through the TV were off the charts. And the two greatest teams in World Cup history going at each other in a World Cup, the race to four titles, all that stuff, all the drama around the game and what's gone on before. We talked about it with how empty the Springboks tanks were going to be, but whatever they did in the week, however many bribes they had, however much biltong they ate, they got themselves ready again and they went to town. Even though it says 12-11 on the score sheet, it was a brilliant spectacle whereby everyone that watched it, whether you were wanting to see entertaining rugby, wanting to see just brute force, that had something for everyone. And do you know what? Credit to the box. They've beaten France by 1 point. They beat England by 1 point. They beat the All Blacks by 1 point in the final. And they have gone to the well and back to go and find something within themselves. Energy reserves. They used their bench. They went 7-1. They took gambles. But as Jim said, every player emptied themselves and took themselves to a level where it was just absolutely phenomenal.
The analogy of a game of inches, nothing better can describe that. And you just said it there, Goody. Sam Kane, we could talk about his red card, which we probably will do. Sia Khaleesi, Chezen Colby, when he goes for the intercept. Jordy Barrett, when he misses the penalty, a couple of inches to the left. Andre Pollard, when he actually gets the kick, a couple of inches inside. The try that was disallowed, where it was just knocked on by an inch by Ardy Savera at the line-out. Like, that is probably the best way to describe it. It was so close. And, you know, going back and looking at what I didn't realise in the stadium, again, because of the energy and the atmosphere and the way my brain works. I know, Goody, you're very good when you do the TV of picking out moments and going back and remembering tries and how they unfolded. Mate, the Springboks didn't score a point after 33 minutes.
I know. Madness, isn't it?
Absolutely mental. We've been doing this podcast for years. Like, we've been involved in the game as players, watching, talking about it, getting different players on. I have never been more proud to be associated with rugby. Like, yes, there's been ups and downs during the tournament. There's been talking points. There was talking points in that game. You know, we can talk about some of the off-field stuff if we want and the social media stuff. But as a product and that game, it was just a privilege to be pitch side watching them. And I always say it, they're millionaire players. They should be paid millions of pounds for doing what they did on that pitch in that final. It was absolutely phenomenal.
Right, shall we wrap things up then with the good, the bad and the ugly?
Please, please.
You mentioned the TMO. Fairly obvious red card, right?
For me, yeah. I mean, obviously, it goes to the bunker, doesn't it? So it's reached the yellow card threshold, and how everyone knows now that it's not the TMO making the decision. He shows the foul play, but then Wayne Barnes sees it. It reaches the threshold of the yellow card. It goes to the bunker. And the way you look at it, Sam Kane's a lovely bloke, as we know. You know, absolute warrior of a player. Not a bad bone in his body. No history, to my knowledge, of red or yellow cards to that extent of a hit like that. So there's no previous of him always tackling like that. He's got one wrong, and he's made Jesse Creel wear one in the chin. And it's a red card. The what we've seen, how it's been, it's a red card every day of the week. Now, I don't want to compare people and tackles and all this stuff, but if that's Owen Farrell making that tackle, the world goes absolutely mad if he doesn't get sent off, right? He's had bans, obviously, off the back of some similar tackles. So you can't then sort of box it off and go, oh, it's Sam Kane, it's an All Black captain, it's the World Cup final, we don't want to see a red card. World Rugby have to follow through with what they've started and how they're managing the game. And as painful as that is, it's the first red card we've ever seen in a World Cup final. It's facts of life. You know, Sam Warburton went through one back in 2011, didn't he? When he got sent off for a tip tackle, captain of Wales, you know, potentially Wales in a semi-final, could have beaten France had that not happened. We have to deal with it. It is a red card every day of the week. You know, no mitigation. Some people are like, oh, Jesse Creel changed his body angle late and there was a bit of a step and then his chin was near the floor. Nah, Sam Kane is always illegal, upright, smashes him in the face, and it's a clear red card. Only thing I do question, though, is why didn't Jesse Creel go for a HIA? Because that's got to be something that everyone needs to look at going forward. I've said it millions of times on this podcast. If you're getting banged in the face and it's with force and a red card, you've got to have a HIA straight away. And it's ironic, a lot of people came back at me on X or Twitter or whatever it's called and said, isn't it ironic that Jesse Creel did one of those early in the tournament, should have been sent off against Scotland and nothing was even looked at really. And then it happens to him in the final and Sam Kane gets red carded. Felt awful for Sam Kane, but unfortunately, these is the rules.
Jim, you're not so convinced.
I'm shaking my head and nodding, and maybe this is the whole thing around rugby, like understanding. And we do know, like we know the framework and we know when we look at something. But again, when I was in the stadium, I was convinced it should have been a yellow card, not a red card. So that was my feeling coming out, having seen it on the big screen, being there in the stadium, watching it back. Yeah, I think it was a red card, but I think not no. And that's the thing on the highest level in a final. I'm not like Goody saying 100%, because we'll talk about the Sia Khaleesi one. He's in a bent position, very different mechanism. The thing is, I feel for Sam, and Ian Foster mentioned it after, and fair play, he didn't want it to be a talking point coming out of the World Cup final that it was a red card, but it was how it happened. It happened so quick, didn't it? And we know that Sam Kane can bang. They said that it wasn't overly powerful, it wasn't a hard shot. It was pretty hard. It was a big old hit. Obviously, it's a marginal one, but I think it's because I feel sorry for him because of what he's been through. We've spoken about him after the quarterfinal, maybe one of the best performances of the World Cup. I don't know how much the public warmed to him as captain, and then that's happened. And they were talking about being a David Beckham moment when he got sent off against Argentina. It's not the same. It's not that moment of madness, but that is what we were just speaking about before. It's the inches, and it's massive. Goody spoke about it. The way the All Blacks played after that just shows that this team are a special group.
Foster was kind of mentioning the involvement that the TMO has got these days, where they can kind of pick and choose where they interject and where they come into the game. Do you see where he's going with that, or do you understand like where there might be some frustration with it?
I actually prefer it. I like it. I don't know whether that's because I was out with all the refs, Goody. I was like you, mate. I was like you are with the refs. I was out with them last night. Well, they were there and I made a conscious decision to go and speak to them. Great bunch of guys. And I said to them, you have the toughest job in rugby. Like if we find it tough and we're just here talking about it a day after and we're talking about these big decisions, yes, it's their job to do that. But my goodness, man, you just see they just stick together in case it all kicks off in the pub or in case they just all stick together in a group. I like the TMO. I do like that. Imagine Barnsley just red cards Sam Kane. Is straight away in that moment, you know, which he's got the minerals to do. I know that you're not talking about specifically the red card TMO that coming in. I like it. You know, the try that was disallowed with the knock on, because Barnsley said, didn't he? It's a try, happy, no knock on.
Yeah. And obviously New Zealanders now are looking at it going, well, the TMO came in and how many phases can you go back to look at something that's a knock on? You can go back for foul play. So not everyone knows the full regulations of how far a TMO can go back or come in for. Now, the bottom line is Tom Foley came in for that line out where Ardie Surveyors ripped it, knocked it on, played on. There's a try that's led from that. If the TMO doesn't come in, the whole of South Africa is saying, what the hell is the TMO doing? And I'm saying, is he in the biscuit tin? Is he having a poo? What's he doing? Where is he? And we had some last year, didn't we? In a, I think it was a semi-final, Saracens semi-final, where Faz is offloaded one from the middle of the stand having a beer with the fans, and it led to a try against Northampton. And we're like, hold on a minute. It was so far and so obviously in touch then that the try should never have stood. Yet, in a World Cup final, we've now got people complaining there's too much TMO. Look at the most watched sport in the world.
NFL.
NFL is the most watched sport in the world. It's the most stop-start game you've ever seen in your life. And what they do is they challenge calls. They have all these processes where they get to the, what they feel is the right decision with their technology. Now, there wasn't a slowness of the game around Tom Foley coming in and, you know, making it a 10-minute review or something like that. It was, there's been a clear knock-on. And actually, we've done the right thing because what's happened is the jumper's got taken out in the air. So you can't have the try for obvious reasons because of the knock-on. But we've seen it as a penalty because he's taken the jumper out in the air. So there's your penalty. And what happens? New Zealand score a few phases later anyway. So actually, in terms of the impact on the game, I don't think it had any impact. And we actually got the right decision. So I'm a big believer in, if the TMO has the technology and he sees something, he has every right to come in and make sure that the correct call is given on the field.
Where did South Africa get it right tactically? Like, was this a game where they made the right calls to win it, or was it just their desperation to win that got them across the line?
Well, emotionally, they were there, and that was the question. I didn't think they could get there again. It looked like they had that one big game against France in the knockout stages. Against England, they were nowhere near that level. And I just didn't know whether the tank was empty, whether the well was dry. But you saw straight away, and you get a gauge straight away within the first kind of 5 or 10 minutes if a team's on. And my goodness me, just physically they're on. The talking point in the lead up to the game, which we didn't speak about on the pod on Monday, was the 7-1 split, which some people would think ridiculous. So firstly, tactically, Rassi and Jacques Nienaber have got the calls absolutely spot on. You're thinking they're going into a World Cup final without a scrum half replacement or a specialist scrum half. Like, it's mental. And Chesson Colby, yes, as special as he is, we've seen scrum halves coming before. If you think about Italy and the Bergamasco brothers throwing...
Hey, I played in that game. He made me look amazing.
Well, there you go. How bad was that? So I know that Chesson Colby is not going to have one of them moments where you've got your back row Bergamasco literally throwing plastic bags in the air. But in a final, it's a massive call, right? Drop Manny Lebok completely out of the squad.
Yeah.
Genius in a way. Obviously, they're not going to feel it's a genius call. They would have been devastated. But you saw the emotion of the bench and stuff like that, just how engaged that team are with each other, like how much of a tight group and family they are. They played it exactly right. Their best players, their biggest players stood up. Like, we know Faf de Klerk's a big game player. Andre Pollard, I've questioned his credentials. Is he going to go and replicate that at Leicester, do you think, Goody? Is he going?
I hope so, yeah. I hope so.
Yeah, hope so. He didn't say definitely. He hopes
yes,
so.
Yes, he is, man. Yes, he is.
Biggest stage, you know?
Biggest plums.
Yeah, the guy has the biggest plums. He's one of them test match animals. And the likes of Ebenezer Beth, you know, Dion Fury coming on. We could talk about him if you want. Like, Bongyun Banambi goes off after a couple of minutes, which in the stadium, I thought it was a horror clear out. But actually, it wasn't as bad as I first thought from Shannon Frizzella. It was
accidental.
It was an accidental, exactly. It wasn't a dog shot. In the stadium, it looked worse. But Dion Fury comes on. And I was talking to producer Rob about Dion Fury. He didn't get capped till he was 35. He's 38 years old.
What?
He's 38 years old, and not just that game, having to come on in a final in your second position. Yes, I read this article where he speaks about, like, I've probably played more hooker than I have back row. Well, not the highest level you haven't in terms of World Cup. You've not done it. And a couple of throws have gone astray during the World Cup for him. But his work around the breakdown for 38 years old, the influences he has, the semi-final, I think he had one of the biggest influences off that line-out where he broke out, went round the corner and nearly scored off it. We're talking about a 38-year-old second choice back row who plays hooker in a final.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely phenomenal. So tactically, the personnel, they got it right. We saw Oxenche the week before in the semi-final in the scrum and the influence that had on it. But this was about desperation on your halfway line when the All Blacks are coming and they're down to 14 men and you're down to 14 men as well. I didn't pick anything up tactically, Goody, that I thought that's what's won in the game. It was just literally who's got the biggest balls, and they were identical, but maybe there was just one slightly bigger on the left side for the Springboks.
You talk about tactics. The tactics are employed before the game as well as during a game, right? And like Jim said, all those decisions. Imagine being John Klein, right? How's he come on in a World Cup final when he was playing for Ireland not so long ago, or trying to play for Ireland? When he came on, I'm like, geez, he's hardly played in the World Cup, has he, in terms of the big games? But that's the genius and the knowledge of Razzie, knowing the limits that his players can get to and the trust that he has in everyone in that squad. Now, it was all built up around Marnie Lebok at the start of the World Cup. You know, they made the biggest of decisions to take him off in the semi-final after half an hour. And then looking at the weather forecast for the final, bringing Andre Pollard back into the starting 15, but then leaving Marnie Lebok out completely. These tactical decisions that they've made by Razzie, by Nienaber, you know, Felix Jones, who hopefully is going to ride in on his white horse and save England rugby as well. Now he's got the England job post-World Cup. They are absolute geniuses for every little detail that they've gone into, the understanding of their whole squad, the family mentality, you know, little things. How good was Vincent Koch last week against England at scrum time?
Wasn't even on the bench.
Doesn't train on Monday. And then you've got the trust in Trevor Nyakane. I mean, the best bit was his dancing on the field after the game. But
how good.
Yeah.
How good.
Yeah.
That was me last night.
Tactically, pre-match and with the selections, they got everything perfectly. In the game, it came down to inches. It came down to Peter Steph Detoy making 28 tackles. I mean,
unbelievable. Absolute phenomenon.
Mate, they weren't just little tap tackles here. They were all, how are you? I'm going to smash the life out of you now. And like, the physicality was just ridiculous. How he's walking the next day, I've got no idea. He was an absolute beast.
How do you think Rassie's going to go down as a coach, as a legend, as someone that ranks with other coaches in the world in the history of the game?
It's the obvious. Best ever. Obvious.
Best ever for me. From where he took the Springboks 4 and a bit years ago, where they were, to winning the World Cup in 2019, the emotion and everything, the planning and everything that went with that, to see how they've evolved over these 4 years and then go back-to-back. And it's back-to-back with probably the toughest World Cup tournament ever to win was this one, because of the quality of all the other teams as well. So you go back to the start of the World Cup, we went into it going, geez, there could be six teams potentially that win this. We've gone to a lot of other World Cups and it's been two teams effectively that could probably win the World Cup. So he has won the toughest of World Cups back to back with massive calls tactically, individually, player based, how the team has evolved, how the team's gone back to type to win the last few games in the knockouts by 1 point. You can't speak highly enough for the bloke. Yes, there's been some issues around what he tweets, and he's had, you know, bans previously, which I think probably were ridiculous anyway. But does he divide opinion outside of South Africa? Inside South Africa, he will be carried on people's shoulders as the greatest ever coach in rugby union, I think.
And what about Ian Foster?
Oh, big fan of his. The way that he's conducted himself with humility, with integrity, very different to Rassie, how he goes about his business. And I go back to the interview after the match, which is the hardest interview I imagine any coach can be sat there in. You've just lost a World Cup final by 1 point. Oh, and by the way, you're not being kept on because you got sacked before the World Cup even started. The way that he's handled himself is a credit to himself. He'll be one of the most sought-after coaches. You know, we can get onto that, like Eddie Jones leaving Australia. If I was them, I'd go all out to get him. But we know that All Blacks don't like to cross over to the dark side and go to, or the light side or the yellow side, to go to Australia. But the way that he's handled himself, the way that he's set up his players, the way that he's backed his captain, the way that he speaks about his team and the difficulties he's had with the All Blacks, a team that are in transition, a team that haven't played that well, not having your captain fit the whole time and sticking with him and picking him in the quarterfinal. Yeah, I mean, it's quite obvious, isn't it? When you look at what he's been through, having not even won the World Cup, but he's come out of this, I would just say, in a much stronger position than when he walked into the World Cup.
So obviously South Africa have gone back-to-back world champions, first to four. Is this Springbok side, people are saying that they might be the greatest rugby side ever? Where do you guys stand on that?
Well, Andy Rowe, if you were checking your X stream, your Twitter stream, that's what I said. I said it out there. And then the South Africans obviously loving it, the rest of the world not so much. I think this is the greatest rugby team we've seen. And Goody mentioned it on the pod today. I've mentioned it last week, the week before. The path they've had to walk in this World Cup is tougher than any other team in any other World Cup. To go back-to-back, people to speak about a dynasty. Obviously, the All Blacks did it in 2011 and 2015. There is argument to say that that team, with the likes of Mar Nonu, Conrad Smith, Dan Carter, Richie McCaw, Kieran Reid, Ali Williams, Retallick when he was there, Whitelock, Mully Aina.
Sonny Bill.
Hey, don't say Sonny Bill. I've said he's one of the goats of the game. People are like, what the hell are you talking about? Of course Sonny Bill's a goat. But for me, because they've gone back-to-back, because of how they've played, I was going to say, look at the team. You'd have all of these teams in your World 15. They've only got one in the World 15, which is
ridiculous.
Mental.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. I think this is the greatest team we've seen. Very different to that All Blacks team, Andy Rowe, of 2015. Play a very different brand of rugby. But in this day and age, and the rugby's evolved a lot over the last 8 years, and with how good France were going into the tournament, Ireland, the best team in the world, being in a pool with Scotland, and the way that they won that final and the semi-final the week before, I think they go down as the greatest team. And some people will hate that, but I'm telling you now, the masses will love it.
I kind of agree and disagree. And you still think that 2015 team of the All Blacks was so far ahead of everyone else and so good. Beauden Barrett was there as well at that time. But they were by far and away massive favourites to win that World Cup. So when you talk about how South Africa won this World Cup, the greatest team ever, on paper you're probably saying 2015 All Blacks, but the way they've won this back-to-back World Cup, you have to say South Africa are equal to that team, but in a very different manner, I think. And the fact that they only got one player in the World 15 Team of the Year, I don't know whether that's an absolutely ridiculous statement from whoever picked it, or it's a tip of the slipper to the South African coaches for actually not being so reliant on certain individuals. It's more about the team, you know, with players rotating so much that they actually, you know, Etzebeth's the only one in it. He got hooked off after 45 in the semi-final. He came off 60, was it, in the final?
Yeah.
You know, and other players in other countries for other teams, if they're the big main players like Etzebeth is, they don't get taken off. But that is a strength of South African rugby, bringing the other guys in. So maybe it's because of the balance of how good so many South Africans are that they don't need such standout players. You know, you take Ardie Surveyor out of the All Blacks and who's coming in for him instead? The next player's nowhere near Ardie Surveyor's level. And that's not a disrespect to the next players. That's respect to how good Ardie Surveyor is for the All Blacks. But South Africa, they bring player after player after player in that all seem to have played and play at a very high level. So there's not a drop off. And that's why they've got such squad strength and why they're world champions.
You mentioned the World 15 that's been announced. Let's look at some of the winners from the World Rugby Awards. Ardie Surveyor, you mentioned him. World Player of the Year, deserving.
Did you give an award out, Jim?
What do you think?
What, mate? Your World Rugby Content Director.
Creative Director.
Well, that as well. All of it. You're basically Bill's sidekick. Why aren't you giving out the awards?
That's not my part of the business, Andrew. That's more, I would say, a kind of Clive Woodward, Johnny Wilkinson set up in there. I'm not invited inside that building. I'm outside. I'm with the masses. I don't even get a comfy seat. Got a cheap seat.
Near the smoking area, though.
Well, I was at the top of the building, so there was whoever was smoking. I think the South African lads were smoking. It was coming to the top of the building. So, yeah, basically, I was in the smoking area. But crazy, isn't it? Like, as you can go around the houses. That's actually really interesting what you said when you're picking that. As in, there's one South African in there, and look at the games and some of the performances. Like Jesse Creel for me has been absolutely outstanding. Peter Steph de Toy for me in the final, that was good enough to put him in
on its own
Team of the Year. Quagga Smith, the influences he's had on the games. You know what I mean? Like, as we mentioned, semi-final, the tap back, the turnover, should have, could have, would have, but it was a turnover against France. He's had some of the biggest impacts on any team in the World Cup, and he's nowhere near it. So yeah, it's over the year as well. It's not just during the World Cup. But for me, to have one South African in there is a bit ridiculous.
Who picks it?
It's a panel, I think. It's a panel.
Dinosaur Dave.
Yeah, Dinosaur Dave.
Bob the Builder.
Yeah, Lenny the Lizard. Ardie Surveyor, monster. Love watching him play. He's a cheat code, isn't he? He is everything. He can do everything and anything. So it was going to be close between him and Eben Etzebeth. I thought going into the game, probably more before the South Africa-England game, that Eben would have got it. But if you're going on out-and-out performances, let's just look at the World Cup. Effectively, that's had the biggest influence on it, hasn't it? Anton Dupont, I know he was in the nominees, but
how's he in that?
It's over the year, Andrew. It's not just the World Cup, though, is it?
Well, over the year.
That's what I mean.
They didn't win the Six Nations.
Mm.
And he's played about three games in the World Cup. They lost in the quarters.
But he's one of the best players in the world.
I get it. But there's better players on form, I think, that should have been in there.
Yeah, I would have had Anton Dupont, as in all the way up until the World Cup, he would have been, well, he has been in the conversation. But Ardie Surveyor, I mean, undeniable. And I say undeniable, having had Eben Etzebeth a couple of weeks ago as the World Player of the Year. But what he's done, the way that Ardie's played, even in the final, no, they lost, was just incredible.
Andy Farrell, World Coach of the Year?
I'm happy with Faz being Coach of the Year. Although, what's Razzie got to do? Or Neen Arbour?
Not tweet.
Yeah, probably not tweet and tag World Rugby in and put Gus Pichot as your picture on your Twitter handle. But no, listen, Faz has been phenomenal as a Ireland head coach. You know, obviously taking them to what they did this year, the long run of unbeaten games, Six Nations Grand Slam, and then getting to a World Cup and losing in a quarterfinal to the fresh quality New Zealand team and just falling short again. So yeah, I mean, for me, it was either going to be, whether you call Razzie the head coach, the director of rugby or whatever, or Andy Farrell. It certainly wasn't Eddie Jones, definitely wasn't Steve Borthwick, but, you know, tip of the slipper to Andy Farrell.
What about Rawa Lui?
And he was a nominee, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So it's class to have him in there. Sad that he's leaving Fiji. It'd be interesting to see what he does after. I don't know if you've heard anything about that, Goody, if he's going to get back into the club game or whatever. But yeah, I mean, what Fiji did, it feels like so long ago, doesn't it? Like, I mean, it has been a long tournament. That's been one of the comments and one of the statements coming out that we potentially need to shorten the tournament. But yeah, Fiji, phenomenal. Like, brilliant to watch. The way that, again, you talk about how a coach conducts himself, not bringing Eddie Jones into it. I love Rassie as well. Like, I don't mind the tweeting. I actually really enjoy it. I love the fact that he's unapologetic of who he is. But Simon Rowell-Lewis, the way that we had him on the pod, friend of the show as well. But I think in order to be in that space as top two or top three, you have to have won something tangible or at least been at the top end of rugby, which Ireland have throughout the whole year.
The sad thing for Simon Rowell-Lewis is he was perfect for that job for Fiji in the interim, wasn't he? And everyone thought he's done such a wonderful job, he's going to keep it and carry on and continue the project. But speaking to him, he hasn't seen his family for nearly a year, pretty much. And his family live in Australia. And that's the thing that people forget. You get tied in with the romance of, I want this coach to do this job. And, you know, everyone in the world would want Simon Rowell-Lewis to carry on as Fiji head coach because of the job he's done, because of the bloke he is, because of his roots in Fiji and how he was brilliant on the podcast. But the facts of life, he hadn't seen his family who live in Australia. I think he'd seen them once in about 14 months or something. When you've got kids, that's the hardest thing in the world. And, you know, massive respect to Simon Rowell-Lewis. Brilliant to see him in the list, and hopefully we'll see him back in the game ASAP.
Do you think Eddie Jones might be taking over from Fiji?
Oh, gosh.
Well, he's going to Japan, isn't he? I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to say I told you so again. I told you so. The bloke's a clown. You know, we talked about him on here. There's all the memes around social media of him running, one, to the Japan job, two, to try and get the Australian boys out of the pub because then, you know, Fiji lost to Portugal and all that stuff. He's not done himself any favours. His time's up. I said it pre-World Cup. You know, Australia have made a massive mistake in getting rid of Dave Rennie, throwing all their eggs in one basket with Eddie Jones, and now they've got 2 years before a Lions tour and he's quit his job. He's a clown. I'm going to leave it at that. Everything he's said and done, all the stories coming out about him, you know, you wouldn't touch him with a barge pole.
Yeah, and he's dug his own grave as well. Australia have played it right. Make him come out, say that he's committed to the job, knowing full well that a deal has been done in Japan. I mean, I've heard that now Japan don't want him. The players don't want him anywhere near the team. I know, like, producer Rob's like laughing, shaking his head. But you can see why, can't you? Like, as in, why would you? So if you're like, as a team, right, Japan, who've struggled, let's be honest, from where they were in 2019, they haven't gone on to do much. They've got a lot of money, a lot of investment. We know Eddie Jones has got history within Japan, did really well for them in 2015. But after that, you look what's transpired after. Why at any point would anyone in that Japan setup be like, he's our man? When you've got someone like an Ian Foster that's now on the market, or a Joe Smith as well. I mean, yeah, I feel like he's gone full nuclear leading into this World Cup. He's thought, fuck it, I'm going out on my sword. I'm going down in a blaze of glory. And if something comes off by a miracle or a fluke, he's going to go down as an absolute legend and his next book will be incredible. But in my opinion, he's a good rugby man. You know, I genuinely believe that to the core. I don't know him. okay, this is just kind of like a very superficial thoughts, but then you hear stuff of some of the coaches, you look at the turnover of coaches, like 20 odd coaches when he was at England, something ridiculous like that. There's something not right, is there? Like, being a coach should be a privilege and it should be one of the best jobs. It's one of the hardest jobs. We've got mates who coach, like, most stressful job. We spoke about Simon Randlouis being away from his family. If you're in an environment with Eddie Jones, it looks like not only do you hate your job, you hate your life.
Yeah. And that's the impact he has on people. You know, and I get people enjoy a hard taskmaster sometimes, but there's so many undertones with Eddie Jones. No one enjoys working with him. Everyone wants to get out the job as fast as they've got in it. And Japan would be absolutely bonkers, I think, to take him on because, as I said, pre-World Cup, his time's up. He's passed it as a coach. The game's moved on. He hasn't changed. And he's a complete dinosaur that he'd do better on TV because he'd have very strong opinions. His coaching is archaic. The way he treats people is even worse. And that doesn't promote for a positive rugby environment in the age that we live in now. So you wouldn't touch him with a barge pole at all.
Well, we can have a chat now with a man who's back at the coalface after starring at the World Cup. Wales and Saracens centre Nick Tompkins joins us. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not bad. Pretty stiff, pretty sore, but you know, like you said, at the coalface, just in the trenches. It's a classic me, really.
Don't talk to me about being stiff and sore. Mate, you used to laugh your head off.
What are you talking about? You never trade through the week either.
Exactly, because I was stiff and sore, Nick, so you know exactly how it is. I know. Mate, so you're back at it now, right? As in, we're talking about the World Cup still, so we were talking about the final just being played. Does it feel like a lifetime ago that you're at the World Cup?
Yeah, it doesn't, like, honestly, I was watching the final. It just doesn't feel like I was there or involved, mate. It's a weird one, and it's... For me, it was so quick, straight after the quarterfinals, was straight in, back and playing. So it was. There was no really time to process it or anything like that.
So they didn't even give you a week off, Saracens. You came back straight in.
Yeah, I came back straight in. Honestly, I got the text in the change room and all the boys were just pissing themselves laughing because they were 2 weeks off, week off. And I was like, no, yeah, back home against Bath.
Jeez.
Hey, highly paid. He's like the Finn Russell of Saracens, that's why. Leave him straight in.
I know you know that's not the truth when you're playing alongside Maratoje.
Well, the funny thing is you should have chosen England then, because obviously you chose Wales. You could have chosen England, but they're the things that you have to take when you play for Wales, right?
All these what-ifs, mate. Hey, well, look, I didn't get picked, so, you know.
Fair enough.
There's only one choice for me.
Fair enough. How was it then? Obviously, you know, it looked like an amazing World Cup from the outside. A lot of people were writing Wales off beforehand. Gats, you know, new into the job again from January, tough Six Nations. But, my God, what a turnaround. And it started with those warm-up games. You then get to a quarter-final, and the performances, obviously, in the group stages were phenomenal. But how much does it hurt even more knowing that you probably should have won that quarterfinal after performing way better than anyone else thought you could at the World Cup?
Well, like you said, it started off with the warm-up games, but for us, it started off way before that. And I think that's what Gats did so well for me, looking back at it, is just he got all the boys in early and just made no excuse about it. Like, you're going to have to work hard. You're going to just have to get down and get with it and just get grind through it. And like, you can't really get away from it, to be honest. Once you get that work in, you're with the boys and you're with them for so long, you start forming quite a tight bond and you start getting to know them way more. And he mentioned one thing. He mentioned that it was like a club feeling. And I think that's what he did so well. And then, you know, fast forward it a little bit, we're doing well in the group stages and you've got such confidence and you're going into this quarterfinal, not expecting to win, but we didn't want to go home. And, mate, it was tough. It was a really, really tough moment because at no point did I think, we're out of this. We always thought we still got this, and then probably the last 2 minutes, and you just gutted. Like, and then it's all over, and you're just looking around, and what, 2 days later, you're saying goodbye to each other, and that's it. It's brutal. To be fair, it's brutal.
Yeah, it's pretty ruthless, especially after that game against Australia, where you lads were so good that it felt like a big turning point for you as a national team. Like, even forward now, like, you think of the confidence that would give you. And Nick, I wanted to ask you about Warren Gatland. Like, we've worked together at Saracens, we've had some of the best coaches. You've have some of the best coaches in the world there. What's different about Gats to like a Pivac or the coaches that you've had at Saracens? Because he's obviously one of the greatest as well in the world as a coach.
Yeah, like at first I wasn't. Obviously I didn't know him and I didn't really know too much of the Six Nations. But then you really got a flavour of the man when you're doing these tough like tours to Switzerland, and he's really put it in. And what was, I think, the best thing about him is he gave all of those boys such confidence in obviously working us so hard, but gave us the confidence to know that we were fit enough and that we'd done the hard yards, and he really built that kind of belief in you. And it was actually quite incredible what he does, and in that way, like man managing and giving you that confidence. And I think that was what I thought was special about him to the other coaches I've had. What he did for that group was quite special, and it made me realize I probably could have done it with any group, you know, taking any kind of group and put them through it, and then have the confidence afterwards. And he just stripped it right back, and he said, look, all of our games, we're aiming to keep the ball on the pitch the longest, and we want to put them through hell. Obviously, it's going to be terrible for you, but he said, look, we want to aim for the most time on the ball on the pitch. And that's what we did. And, mate, it was horrible. I didn't like it too much, but it did a good job.
It did. Jim, you mentioned all the coaches then, the Saracens coaches, Gats, and all the brilliant coaches that Nick's had. What about the Dragons ones that you had when you were there for a year? Did they get mentioned? Naz?
Oh, no, yeah, they get a slight mention, you know, they're there or thereabouts.
Good lads.
I get stick to this day, honestly, about how bad my rig was and how bad I was for how long I was there for. So it's brilliant that every time my rig gets challenged on it. So I know, Goody, you've got the same issues, you know, everyone's comments on your rig.
But, mate, honestly, and Jim does as well for different reasons.
I reckon I was worse, pal. Mate, yeah, it wasn't great.
I've never looked at you and thought he needs to sort his rig out. I've looked at you and thought
this kid
can break tackles like no one else. He might only be short, but my God, he can break tackles. I didn't even know the rig was a thing.
No, well, it was at the Dragons after COVID, mate. I was... They told me to pile on the pound, so I got to about 100 kegs, and mate, I was hanging. I wasn't great.
Oh gosh, did you even get the ball at Drags? Did it ever come outside nine or not? Or was it just like kick the ball?
I had Doc on the inside, so he wanted to carry all the time. So I just let him. I was like, yeah, you can do that.
Jamie Roberts was there.
Jamie Roberts, yeah.
But at the end of life, wasn't he? He was at the end of life there as well.
I tell you what, he did a job, and he was. I will say this, not because I like him, but he was. He did a job for what he was good at, and I think he actually played quite well.
What are the Welsh lads like, Nick? You've been in the England setup. You're at a very English club, Saracens, England heavy. I know there's been a few South Africans and Scotland legends in the mix as well there over the recent years.
You're talking about Sean Maitland?
Oh, there was Kelly Brown, Sean Maitland.
Kelly Brown.
Yeah.
Duncan Taylor, yeah. Yeah, there was a vice-captain in there as well. But just being in that Welsh environment, like... Give us an idea of what it's like. They're quite quiet, aren't they? Like a quiet bunch, a bit enjoy each other's company. They don't like being away from home.
Yeah, they don't like being away from home. They don't want to move too far away from home. But quiet, I wouldn't give them that. Like all of them are such lively lads, and they will rip into you whenever they get the chance. Of course, you can imagine what I get stick for, hairline and other things like that. And that was another thing. Like we had committees set up. We had a joke of the day, thought of the day, and it was pretty brutal. But there was some really funny times. And I actually really miss that group. It was a really, really good group. And I think we're going to look back at it later down the line, and I think we realise, obviously, it didn't go how we were, but like it was such a good time and enjoyable process throughout all of it.
Who's getting hammered the most in there then? I can imagine Lewis Rees-Sammet is getting quite a bit.
Well, yeah, he does a little bit, but it's hard when you've got Tom Francis on the team, you know, Franny.
Yeah.
So, like... You got honestly, mate, you got hammered every day, and it's so hilarious.
Imagine being called Franny.
Yeah. He's such a nice boy, but he gets abused. It's so funny.
Have you guys talked at all about the next 4 years and looking ahead to Australia at all? Is there any plan being put in place around that?
None. Mate, I've heard nothing. I've literally off the bus, what was it, 3-hour drive back, training with Saris the next day, and that's it.
It is as brutal as that, isn't it?
That's it. It was like, yeah. Shake hands. Yeah, that was awesome. Cheers, and then off you go.
Yeah, so as a player then, you know, you've been through that camp and you said it was hell, right?
Yeah.
At times. Training was ridiculously hard. You've come through the World Cup. You've played exceptionally well. You get knocked out, unfortunately, in the quarterfinals in a very tight game. Next day, you fly back. You're training with Saracens the day after. And we talk about player welfare and all this stuff. Have you got a plan at some point where you can see a bit of downtime? Because how hard is it mentally for you? And I know Saracens had a real sticky first game of the season, to then go from the highs of that environment with Wales at the World Cup to then back with Saracens, which I know is a great environment, but ultimately it's that never-ending treadmill of rugby again, isn't it?
Yeah, so in fairness, Saris are going to find a way to let it down the line to give me some time off, and Mark McCall's already spoken to me, and I trust them completely. It's not I'm not too worried about that, but... I do look at it, and I look at some of these boys, these international, especially who've been doing it for a while, you know, Owen, Amaro, Jamie George, Like, I honestly don't know how they've done it. It's one game after another, and it's never ending. And it, and I, like, even physically it's tough, but mentally it must take a toll, because, man, I've struggled. Luckily, at the same time, it's kind of, I've not been able to dwell on it too much, because I've had to just get on with it. So I haven't really been able to think about it too much. But like, for those boys coming in as well, it's going to be, fair play to them. It's going to be tough, because the where they got to and how far they went and how well they did. And then obviously for it to not go where they wanted just by a point, and now they're straight in to a club that we need them. You know, we had a hell of a win at Gloucester, but we need some of that bolstering back, because we need to start winning games.
Nick, too many games. You can say this now, you're an established player. I think it's ridiculous the amount of games you need to play. I think it's a great platform for you to talk about it. I think the fact that you come from a World Cup, not just the emotional toll that that has, because you can deal with the emotional side, this is about manning up, but the physical part of the game, I just think there's too many games. You feel that or not? I mean, the season's not even started. I mean, what are you in now for Saracens? Three games in. Yeah. My goodness me. You're not even factoring in the Champions Cup as well. And then you've got the Six Nations happening. I know there's nothing happening in November. And then it's ridiculous. You feel there's too many games?
It's got easier now with 10 teams in the league. I do think there's too many games, but I also think they're at the wrong time. I don't know why we have Prem games while there's international games going on. Like, this doesn't happen in football, and they have it completely right. I don't know why teams that have a lot of international players get punished. And then it comes into assist. Like, I know you're giving guys get game time from it, and that's great for them. But at the same time, we're now being pushed pretty hard now, because we have to get these boys in, because haven't had great results. Because, you know, we've lost what I think it was like 13 internationals, two starting hookers. So like, for me, I don't know if it's too many games, but I just think, why are we putting these games on when people obviously want to watch the internationals, or there's not full strength? I think that to me puts on too much pressure on Premiership teams to then, when they do come back. And you're right, Jim, we get paid all right, and they get paid a lot of money, so they have to play. And so I think it should be moved, to be honest, more towards summer, a summer tournament kind of thing, and maybe align it with the rest of the world. And then maybe you get chances to properly rest players. That's what I would think, and I think that's the best way, but I mean, it doesn't happen, does it?
Yeah, but mate, you've got a voice as a player, and that's the important thing. I think the big shift now needs to be you lads talking about it, mate. Like, else it's not going to change, is it? We're just going to carry on. We'll just roll on season after season.
Look, to be honest, I think that's a massive epidemic with rugby. I think we don't really have a union, really. We don't really have... I mean, we talk about the RPA, and I'm not going to bash the RPA, but realistically, they're beholden to the RFU, and I think we don't really have any voices in terms of as players. And I look back at what Wales did in the Six Nations when they were calling the strike, and even that didn't really go the way some of the boys wanted. But it was nice to see a bit of player empowerment and a bit of, you know, we're not going to take this line down. I think ultimately that's what we need. But like, it's complicated, isn't it? Because you've got some teams who are struggling at the moment and they need the games. But I don't know the answer, but I agree with you. I think as a whole, we need way more of a voice, way more power in what we're saying and how we're saying it, because at the moment it just feels like it just gets decided for us and we just keep rolling with it.
Yeah, you need to do the George Cruz, go on strike at Christmas. That's what you want to do, Nick.
That's why you got a game, Jim. And on Jim, Nick, if there was someone that could be a spokesperson for you, and Jim talks about himself as the vice captain, is he someone that you'd want to lead that? Would you follow him into battle?
Please, God, no.
Please, God, no.
Please. Now, you could be there, Jim. You could be like our token guy on the side.
Don't say token. Don't you dare.
As a jester.
Call me a token.
No, Jim, you'd be quite good, mate. You'd speak your mind. I think it'd be quite good.
Let's look at some of the exciting stuff that is coming up on the field. Obviously, you've got the Six Nations coming up in a few months' time now, so that's something to look forward to. But also, Saris, you're back at Tottenham to face Quins. Huge for you guys.
Mate, massive. I love playing at Tottenham as well. Obviously, it's like the unbelievable stadium, the facilities. It's nice to see what the football world, how they live. So I love it every time. Like, and it's usually pretty lively as well. With Quins, brilliant rivalry. I'm properly excited for that one.
Why do you guys hate Quins? Because I know Jim hates Quins as well. What's the shtick there?
I don't hate Quins. Who told
you?
No,
you can say it. You got like...
No, it's the other way around. No, Andre Esterhazen came on and said, quote unquote, I hate Saracens. That he said it. And then they got absolutely smoked. Then we went and absolutely smashed them.
Oh, you know, it's a rival, isn't it? And they've got a lot of characters that can wind you up. And they're funny with it as well. You've got Joe Marler.
Oh, no, don't you mention Joe Marler on this podcast. Oh, yeah. But with that, what is it with Quins then? I mean, it's almost become a thing now, hasn't it? I think they're envious of the success, like the England setup and stuff like that. Let's really try and sell this stadium out. Let's make like 150,000 people want these tickets.
No, I think it's the characters, and I think they bring a lot of character, don't they? They're a lot of individuals that are quite funny, quite tasty, can be quite controversial, and I think we like to think of ourselves more as, I don't know, we try not to be that way at Sarries, don't we? Well, we've got honesty and stuff plastered on our stadium, so you can't be too honest. Yeah,
really?
I see. Yeah, no, we did. Still after all the way down, don't worry.
To Quins and honest.
We're extra honest now.
Extra honest, yeah, put the extra in there. Fair enough.
I think it's that, and I think... they always raise our game when they play us, and I think that's one of the biggest things. You really want to put it to them,
mate. You're loving it. You're loving being a baller. You're enjoying it, mate. It's awesome watching your career. Like, I know we're having a bit of tongue in cheek on here, but when you play rugby, even as a young lad when I was at Saracens, it looks like you absolutely love it. Like, what's it like? Just give the listeners a bit of energy about what it's like at the top end.
I just think like that World Cup was an absolute dream for me. I've never experienced a country and a fan base from everyone who just wanted to say hello to you, wanted to, like, was waving at you, was shaking your hands, and they absolutely loved it. And I think it was one of those things that I've never done before. And obviously it was going great after the final. It was unbelievable. I had a hell of a piss up afterwards. And then to have that World Cup, like, I've never experienced anything like that. And it's like, it's, mate, it's so addictive. You just want to go again. And I just want to see how far I can go and keep enjoying myself, because it goes quick. Believe it or not, Jim, I'm 28 now, nearly 29. So,
are you really? I had you down as 25.
Jeez. No, yeah, I know the hairline is deceiving, but it is still. I'm 28, and I feel like I'm an old man. So I'm trying to really eke everything I can.
You got to keep going. There's Lions tour in 2 years, and Jim tipped you should have been on the last Lions tour. So
is it Jim? Did you?
Yeah, you know, you saw that. I know everyone was sending you the messages and said, oh, look.
What I do want to know then, obviously you're back. You've been back at the club a couple of weeks. This weekend's game, you're playing Leicester at home. And it's quite ironic that the two most influential teams in the Premiership in terms of players at the World Cup are Saracens and Leicester. And you're playing each other a week after the World Cup final. Any sign of the England boys? Are they back this week, or are they off on holidays to Dubai for a couple of weeks? I know the Leicester lads have been given a load of time off, and they're not coming back till round five.
I'm not too sure, but, well, I reckon we're going to see them all on Tuesday. So they've all said see you on Tuesday. So we'll be seeing them on Tuesday. I don't know who's going to be starting or whatnot, but I think there's going to be a fair amount of the boys playing and getting stuck in.
Did they say see you on Tuesday or see you next Tuesday? I can't work out which one.
No, we'll see you on Tuesday.
Yeah, well, I spoke to Dominic, the owner of Sarries, and he said, like, Owen Farrell especially is mad keen to get back and start shouting at Nick and telling him to do it again. So you'd be ready.
Can't wait.
Get the earplugs in.
Well, I had it from Dan Bigger, didn't I? So look, I get it everywhere I've been, so.
Who's the worst out of them two at shouting at you?
Oh, Dan Bigger.
Really?
Because it's like, it's Dan shouting at you. So, I feel like he wouldn't beat me up, whereas Owen probably would beat me up, you know. But Dan is just like a little puppy dog.
Do you ever shout back?
God, no. I want to keep my position.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
All right, Nick. Hey, thank you so much for coming on the show, mate. Well done at the World Cup, and best of luck this weekend against Leicester.
Thank you for having me, boys. Good to see you, Jim. You're looking good, mate.
Not me.
Good to see you, mate.
Andy, always the best. That was more irony for Jim, that was, but yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, no, you're lying.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, Nick.
Come on. Legend. Thanks, Nick. Good luck at the weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com. This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Well, with the Six Nations just a few months away, we'll be running some promos on social media over the coming months with Gulliver's Travel. Just make sure you're following us on Instagram as they'll be offering tickets for the England v Wales game at 10% off with the code RugbyPod10. And we'll be doing some giveaways as well. So get involved in that.
Top lad.
Top lad.
Yeah, he is. I couldn't understand him, though, with his harsh Welsh accent. Was it Eddie Jones that said he was too small for England? What a mug Eddie Jones is.
Ridiculous.
What a mug. But yeah, lovely kid, isn't he?
Mate, I'm a massive fan, as you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate. Great player as well.
Yeah.
Great player. Fantastic kid. I was there at Saracens with him, but when he was coming through, he was brilliant.
And it's good to know Faz shouts at everyone else as well, as you, Jim Hamilton. He shouts at Tompkins. He shouted at Hamilton back in the day. Nothing changes, eh?
Nothing changes. Loves his rugby. Loves his code. He's back.
I'm going to get better this week against Leicester Tigers.
Hey, well, they did get better. They got a bronze.
They did, and we've got to talk about it. I watched the game Friday night. Jim, were you at the game Friday night?
Oh, no. No, I was resting up for the big one. But I didn't believe in that game. I feel bad. I don't want to speak badly of a game, but imagine putting your head in the spokes in that game.
No, and to be fair, England, you know, it was all about the attitude of trying to win the game, and it wasn't about entertaining or anything like that. It was like, we're here to win a bronze medal, and fair play to them. They committed to it. They did it that way. And do you know what? You go back before the World Cup, and if you offered England fans and players a chance of losing to the eventual winners by a point in a semi-final and then win the bronze medal, the position that we were in, we'd have snapped your hand off, because it's like you've been competitive. But I just don't know, like, this brilliant that we finished third and won the bronze medal. We're the third best team in the world at the minute. You're only as good as your last game, everyone else. And I know people have come at me and go, oh, France are better, Ireland are better. We're third in the world, lads. Let's get the World Cup draw out the way now, lads, for 2027. We'll have an easy group and then we'll carry on. But I don't know, just thinking whether, and I might be speaking harshly again, and people come at me going, why are you so critical? It's not critical. It's just being honest, in my opinion, which might not count for much in a lot of people's eyes, but it's just my honest opinion. Has that one performance against Africa in the semi-final in the rain, when the conditions suited a Steve Borthwick game plan, has that papered over loads of cracks and issues within
massively
English rugby? Of A, how the game's run, B, how England play, C, the connection between the fans and the players and the team, and the love for the team. Like, you look at some of the other countries, the love that their fans have for their team, and yes, there's a load of, you know, red chino wearing England fans that love England rugby, but the genuine connection and the genuine empathy between the fans and the team and Steve at the minute and how England play, I don't think it's probably been, I don't know whether to say worse, because it was probably worse under Eddie Jones, but it's not great. And the RFU, they're talking about these hybrid central contracts. They're talking about, they've announced 3 November internationals against the big three, South Africa, Australia and New Zealand. If you're expecting fans to rock up to Twickenham and pay in some of the steep prices that they're having to pay to get into the stadium and watch the game,
you better put on performances that make fans want to come back and get excited about. And the kick and clap and the kick and chase and the kick and hope that England play, and we played it in the Friday night game. Anytime we got down towards their 22, there was a chip kick coming, a kick over the top, a grubber kick. It's just not great to watch. So I think Steve needs to evolve as a coach. Congratulate him for doing what he did, getting to a semi-final and then winning the third place game in the manner that they did. But I still think it's underwhelming how England have played. And that's just my truthful, honest opinion.
In their defence though, Goody, is it not a kind of a similar game plan to what South Africa played in the semi-final and final? A lot of kick and chase?
A lot of that is to do with the conditions on the day, right? So if that's a dry day against Africa in the semi-final, South Africa don't play that way against us. If it's a dry day on Saturday in the final against New Zealand, South Africa have more to their game than they showed. Sometimes weather dictates how a game is played. And when it works for you, as it did for England in certain circumstances. So the Argentina game was great. Curry gets sent off. It was a 10-man game that we dominated through physicality, kick chase, kick receipt, getting after the ball, winning the breakdowns, the set-piece battle as well. That's how you win certain games. It's not how you grow a team and grow a fan base and entertain a fan base and become a winning team. Yeah, I might be contradicting myself a bit with what England have done, but you ask any England fan, how pumped are you to watch England play? A lot of them would be like, not really. It's hard to watch. It's dour. It's a tough watch. So there needs to be huge changes in the England rugby camp, whether that's personnel. You know, Steve, I'm not saying Steve should get the sack. He shouldn't. Steve's a very good coach in his own right, but he's not a head coach for me. He's not a leader of people, a leader of men. He's a real hard-working coach that gets the best out of, or tries to get the best out of individual players. He needs someone above him with a bigger scope and a bigger vision of how the game should be played, I think. And that man could be Razzy Erasmus. That man could be a Joe Schmidt. Could be someone with rugby IQ that, yeah, Fozzy. Try and get Fozzy or someone like that with rugby IQ. Wayne Smith, some of the best tactical and technical brains in the game to help out Steve Borthwick and try and engage fans with the team and also get people excited. Steve talks about excitement in his press conferences, and nothing's been exciting. Let's be honest, nothing's been exciting. And I might be going harsh, Marla's a tool, but
well, you know whose fault this is, Goody?
Eddie Jones. Eddie.
Bill Beaumont's.
Why?
No, Bill Beaumont. Marla's raging with him after the game with how they've played, so he's taking out on Bill.
What's that about? Where did that come from? Why did he do that?
Oh, no, because that's what he does. He's trying to make a statement, isn't he, on his last hurrah.
Attention.
Like he does the whole time. He's doing my head in. He's doing my head in at the minute. Not like, as in, I don't know what he's been saying to Goody. I've just seen bits and bobs on social media because I went on there, I'm being tagged left, right and centre, but he's blocked me. Like, one minute he's following me, next minute he's blocked me. I don't even know what I've done. No idea. And then, you know, you see that happen, like just not shaking his hand. And you know, I've got history of shaking hands and not shaking hands with Vern Cotter. Mate, someone that gives you the hand, like regardless of what you're thinking or what's going on, it's just plain rude. So I don't know. I'm thinking that maybe Joe Marler doesn't like the way that England have played this World Cup, and he maybe thinks that it's filtered down from Bill Beaumont from the good old days.
Jim, you're a big fan of Bill Beaumont. You were tweeting about him the other day.
Yeah, it's my boss trying to get a bonus at the end of the World Cup. So I'm not. No, I put a tweet out in support and people are coming at me hard on social media as they do. Like, and I know, and we'll get into it about the new makeup of the World Cup, the Nations Cup and the different opinions and stuff blowing up around some of the Tier 2 nations on that. Having seen what Joe Marler did, it's almost like, mate, your granddad's putting his hand out to shake your hand. Like, you've got a bloke who's been there, he's done it. Whether or not you believe with some of the stuff that's come out over the last few weeks, maybe it's to do with the Tom Curry stuff and the Bongi Mbonambi. I'm not too sure, but I just felt that he let himself down and his team by not shaking Bill Beaumont's hand. So I put a tweet out just saying that, well, I'll read you. I said, no agenda here apart from the bonus. No licking ass apart from the bonus. And I just said, basically, the fact from what I have seen that Bill Beaumont is a great rugby man through and through and a class human. Like that, they are facts, right? As in, like, that's got nothing to do with what he thinks or whether or not he rubber stamps or has nothing to do with decisions that are made and is just the front man. And I just said, show a bit of respect and be a role model if you've got an issue and be man enough to pick up the phone, which Joe Marler could do, and have an open, honest chat and say it to his face. And I think, like, Bill Beaumont, and we can talk about these new structures now and how people are pissed off around it. This isn't me saying at all that I agree with World Rugby's decision on these things. Like, this is me just sticking up for a rugby man that is a good bloke. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
But I know that it's blown up and stuff like that, Goody, around that. But that's fair enough, right? Bill's a good bloke, isn't he? As is Pichot as well. Pichot's a decent bloke. He's a good rugby man.
Yeah. So Bill is chairman of World Rugby. He's made the press announcement around all the changes. But let's be clear on this, and I tweeted about it the other day. There's 12 unions that control a massive percentage of the voting structure. That's not Bill voting for stuff himself. That is the unions who are voting for their own benefit of what is right and wrong. Now, you talk about this Nations Cup, Nations League, that's going to happen every couple of years, and the lack of promotion and relegation. Let's just remember who's voted for that. So the only tier one nation, supposed tier one nation, that voted against it was Argentina, who are led by, not officially, but Augustin Pichot is the guy that wants to reform world rugby. The All Blacks, England, France, South Africa, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, all the big ones have voted for what is best for them. So a lot of the supposed tier two nations, Tonga, we've seen what Lima Sopawanga said. And the voting structure of it is something that needs to change, where everyone's got a fair vote that stands for the same amount of votes, if that makes sense, because certain unions have more voting power than others. And that's the problem with the system. But it's not Bill Beaumont's fault. Bill Beaumont, as chairman, has made the announcements and the changes. But it's the unions that are self-preserving their own interests that have created this issue. So it's like with Joe Marley, wouldn't shake Bill Beaumont's hand. Would he go and shake his paymaster's hands, who pay him his wages? Well, of course he would, because he's waiting for a check off them. But they're equally to blame if you've got an issue, or if anyone's got an issue with this World League, because it's the voting structure that allows them just to feather their own nest and, you know, keep it within the realms of what suits them. So that's the hard thing. And that's where rugby is quite backward, I think, and needs complete reform, which, as we said, Augustin Pichot was going to be the guy that would try and change that. But takes a long time to unravel. I'm disappointed with how that Nations League looks in terms of the promotion and relegation. Why we're waiting to 2030 to get a team promoted into that is just ridiculous. It should be straight promotion and relegation from the off. And there has been huge reform and there has been huge change, but there's still a hell of a lot of work to do.
Imagine how big those games would be if there was promotion relegation.
Yeah, of course. That's a big thing for me. Like, I think it should be that. Just because I'm creative director of World Rugby doesn't mean that my ideas and opinions are aligned with what's signed off. Well, I don't even get an opinion. Like, it's not as if it's like I have any say or whatsoever. Like, it'd be unbelievable. But Goody's right. Like, the devil is in the detail with that. People think, and look, I would have bagged World Rugby unless I knew about the structures of it. Like, World Rugby are the governing body. Yes, of course, they have say. The big players in this are SANZA, which is South Africa, New Zealand, Australia rugby, and the EPCR, which is like the European rugby effectively, and the Six Nations. They're the key people that are making the decisions. So I don't know how you work through that, but as we come out of the World Cup, and yes, these changes have happened during the World Cup, but at some point, whether or not this is a CVC coming in or whoever, a big investment company, wrapping their arms around rugby from a financial point of view, but also a governance and getting business people who understand business and understand them structures, it's going to be this constant flip-flopping.
Yeah.
And one other thing to say is that no one's ever going to be happy, are they? So you think, for example, if you're giving tier two nations more games against tier one nations, you're effectively giving more games of rugby, which we don't want, than if you're dropping, so, you know, so say, for example, like Tonga play England. People hate me saying this. So Tonga play England, for example, but England could play New Zealand from a revenue point of view, but they can't play Tonga as well because you can't add that extra game.
Yeah.
The preference will be, whether people like it or not, will be to watch England versus New Zealand. It's going to make more money. It's a higher profile game. And it's all this thing around rugby, like, we have to be nice. Of course we do. Inclusivity and these things and rising of the nations up. There is a responsibility to do that. Like, I genuinely believe that. But it isn't as simple as that. It's a contact sport, and we are so fragmented across all the different unions, like Goody just referenced there, that I just hope we come out of this World Cup and there's people that have had eyes on this tournament and thought, you know what, there's something there. Let's invest in this. Let's fucking throw £100 billion and actually streamline everything we're doing and making it not only simple to consume from a club level, but from a governance and from a global streamline. God, my God, I've just put the world of rugby to rights.
Yeah. Governance is the big word, isn't it? Which is the voting structures, how it's ran. And the big thing is this Nations League, Bill's taken a lot of flack because he made the announcement as chairman of World Rugby. But the bottom line is that Nations League or Nations Cup or whatever it's called is owned by the Six Nations and SANZA. And that is where the problem lies. And so governance is the major stumbling block across everything. But Jim's right. Someone come in and throw some money at it and we can make it an unbelievable product. But there has to be buy-in and understanding that some have to give up a little bit and some countries get a little bit more than they've currently been getting. And then we get to an equilibrium. But the key thing is the global season and fitting everything around that.
All right. Well, shall we finish things off then with the good, the bad and the ugly?
Yeah, loads of good this week. Let's start off with Exeter. They hammered Sale 43-0 at Sandy Park to follow up their thrashing of Saracens there a couple of weeks ago. Big start to the season at home for them. Finn Russell gets a shout out in the good this week. His crossfield kick was absolutely sublime in the wet down in Bath. Jamie Shilcott gets the shout out in the good as well. He got 20 points for Leicester. He steered them around the field beautifully, kicked the winner, showing massive plums with the last kick of the game down at a wet and soaking Bath. So big shout out to Jamie Shilcock. Ardy Surveyor gets a shout out in the good this week. He won World Player of the Year and a hell of a tournament from him, just carrying and growling everywhere throughout France. So big shout out to him. Peter Steph de Toy, he gets a shout out. 28 tackles in a World Cup final. I don't reckon me or Jim made 28 tackles in our career, and he's done it in 80 minutes against the All Blacks.
I didn't.
No, nor me. So he was absolutely heroic. Sia Khaleesi gets a shout out in the good. He's the second man to win a World Cup twice as captain. But the good this week goes to South Africa. Of course it does. Razzie, Jacques Nienaber and all his boys, they're going to get the good. Winning the quarterfinal, semi-final and final all by a single point. They've gone back to back. They just know how to win rugby matches. They are the ultimate tournament team. And that's why the South Africans, as world champions, Andy Rowe's absolutely devastated. I've got my green polo shirt on in respect to South Africa. And that's why South Africa win the good this week.
You've gone on a bit.
The bad. A few bits of bad. La Rochelle lost 27-24 at home to Cast in the top 14. Not started well for them. Scarlets, they took 50 at the Stormers in the URC. The Dragons get their customary mention in the bad. They've now lost 17 league games in a row to their rivals Cardiff. Jim, what's going on at the Dragons?
I didn't see it, sorry. I'll catch up on that one.
That's fair enough. Where's Dean? Newcastle are going to get a mention in the bad this week. Three straight defeats to start the season and horrible conditions and a shocking game on Sunday against Northampton Saints. Sorry about that, producer Rob. But the bad this week is going to go to whoever put the World 15 players team of the tournament together, because they only put one South African in it. How are you world champions, yet you've only got one player in there? So whoever's on that committee, Dean the Dinosaur, Bob the Builder, Larry the Lizard, whoever it is, only putting one South African in the World Team of the Year. That's why you've got the bad this week. And then the ugly, two bits of ugly this weekend. We're going to start off with a load of Kiwis, Andy Rowe.
What?
Sending Wayne Barnes and his wife death threats. Absolutely ludicrous. Have a word with yourselves. Get yourselves off the bottle, off social media.
Has that happened after the game?
Yeah.
I've not seen it. I've missed all that.
Yeah, absolute disgrace, you Kiwis, Andy Rowe. Just take your defeat.
Don't put us all in one, whatever you call it.
Bucket.
Whoever's sending death threats, they can get fucked. But anyway.
Yeah.
Mate, you're all weird, though, so that's one thing you are aligned on. That's
true. Mate, we almost beat the greatest team in the world ever.
No, you didn't, though, did you?
Well, that doesn't make you not weird.
Mate, we nearly beat them as well. We lost by a point, and we came closer than you. So,
oh, no wonder you're saying that they're the greatest team ever. Anyway,
they are the greatest team. Anyway, we're starting off with Kiwi sending death threats to Wayne Barnes, but the ugly this week, unfortunately, sticking with the Kiwi theme, has to go to Sam Kane, first ever player to be sent off in a World Cup final. No mitigation. You've got to go lower. You're a lovely bloke and all that. But New Zealand media, you're going to get a mention in the ugly for complaining about it. Saying that's cards ruin the games. Nah.
Why do you hate us so much, Goody?
I don't. I love New Zealand.
Hey, Eddie Jones, give it to him.
Nah, I'm not giving it to Eddie Jones. I've had enough of that clown.
No, he's not. He's fueling the South Africa beast. We've seen our numbers rocket by talking up the South Africans, so that's why. There's nothing in New Zealand, they're not interested in us.
We will get Razzie on this podcast at some point, I'm telling you, boys. So yeah, Sam Kane's tackle, New Zealand media, basically New Zealand, anything to do New Zealand, you get the ugly.
Oh, wow. Okay, thanks, Goody. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, producer Rob, and thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and make sure that you've subscribed on Spotify.
Rugby Spot.
Spotify Pod, 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 Pod.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.